This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last night, President Bush gave Saddam Hussein and his sons 48 hours to leave Iraq or face the full force and might of the United States. War is likely within days. How the war will be fought remains to be seen, but experts and analysts agree that the military outcome is not in doubt. U.S.-led forces will defeat the Iraqis. But will that be victory? How do we define success in Iraq? Is it only a matter of regime change? Is there a number of casualties after which a military success turns into a humanitarian disaster? Would catastrophic American casualties after a chemical weapons attack change your mind? What about terrorist attacks at home? Or what about the future stability of Iraq? Whatever your opinion about the decision to go to war, clearly some outcomes will be better than others. How do you think Americans will measure success? How will you personally define it? And what would constitute failure? Call us. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us at totn@npr.org. Bob Boorstin is director of Worldview Initiative 2003, which is based here in Washington, D.C. Worldview 2003 recently polled Americans about foreign policy, including the question of how success in Iraq should be defined. And Bob Boorstin joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks very much, Neil.
Public opinion polls in this regard, were you trying to establish a pre-war benchmark or what the expectations of the American public are?
Yes, we were trying in part to establish a benchmark for where the American public is thinking this war might go and exactly how it might measure success or failure, the lack of success. At the same time, any of these kinds of things are obviously hypothetical. And when the hostilities begin, opinions change.
Yeah.
So all of this is obviously experimental and but interesting nonetheless.
So public opinion obviously is a moving target.
Very much so, especially now. Iraq seems to be a barrier or a turning point, how the war turns out, in where the American public will come down on bigger questions of foreign policy, working with allies, whether or not we should bear the burden financially of things like this.
Now, we're going to talk about some of the scenarios you did ask people about, but obviously you can't test for everyone. How did you make up your decisions?
Well, we thought about the things that could possibly affect the world, the position of the United States, the way people think about us, and also about the kinds of effects that were obvious that could happen in a war, things like casualties on our side, mm-hmm. Casualties among Iraqi civilians, and then other things that have been part of the debate. For example, we asked people whether or not it would be a success if we disarmed Iraq, we got rid of Saddam Hussein, but there was long-term damage with our relations with the UN and allies, NATO, etc.
Well, let's talk about some of those. Every one of your scenarios, or the first 10 at least, begins with the conceit Saddam Hussein is removed from power and Iraq is disarmed, but. So tell
yes.
us about some of those scenarios.
Yeah, we were trying to set it up in a way that the administration won in the military sense that it disarmed Iraq and did that. One of the situations that we did, as I was saying, was whether or not there would be long-term damage. When we asked that question, fully 55% of the people said that if this turned out to be the case, the war would not be a success in their minds. We asked people whether if Saddam was removed and Iraq was disarmed, but it cost us $100 billion to stage the war and billions more to reconstitute Iraq, would that be a success? 52%, a small majority, but nonetheless telling, said no, it would not be a success to them if that happened. If there were 1,000 American casualties, would that be a success? And that is seven times the number of casualties that we had in the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. And in that case, about two-thirds of the people said yes, they would consider that a success.
And there was another one, Saddam Hussein is removed from power and Iraq is disarmed, but thousands of Iraqi civilians are killed.
That's right. And a small majority of 54% said in that case they would consider it a success. It's hard to obviously quantify, and it's not an exercise you want to get into. But it is what is most interesting here, I believe, is that the American public is not looking at this in one dimension. They're looking at it in many dimensions, not only casualties and so-called collateral damage, but also the diplomatic and financial implications of this war.
One of the things you tested for also, Saddam Hussein is removed from power, Iraq is disarmed, but before that's done, catastrophic casualties from chemical or biological weapons attacks.
Yeah, and in that case, the American public would say by about two-thirds of the public would say that they would not consider that a success.
Perhaps that word catastrophic.
Yes, the catastrophic, I think, is what pushed it that high. And, of course, again, this is one of those questions where once it happens, you really can't say where people will end up.
Mm-hmm. Once it happens, a possible response could be, we must go and, you know, avenge our righteous dead.
Yes, of course, that could be one. Another response could be if he manages to let go of a few chemical weapons and there are not great effects on the troops. Mm-hmm. People might say, well, why did we go there in the first place if these weapons aren't so terrible?
Or conversely, I think the French ambassador said today that if Iraq does use weapons of mass destruction, France would change its mind and join the coalition.
Right. And I think it would give the Bush administration a prima facie case that it made the right decision in going to war.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. How do you define success in a war with Iraq? How do you think Americans will define success in a war with Iraq? Our first caller is Jeff, who joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Good morning. I was just going to say that for me, success in Iraq would be defined as enabling the Iraqi people to get on with their lives and hopefully have a situation in the Middle East, or at least Iraq, Iran, and Kuwait, where those countries are not deliberately trying to mess with each other, and that the Iraqi people can get on with enjoying the kind of peaceful lives that we here in America take for granted.
Mm-hmm. Was there a question that tested that, Bob Boorstin?
Not exactly. We did test a question on whether or not it would be considered a success if there was more instability in the Middle East, or if a dictator were to return to Iraq, which perhaps is as close as we got. And two-thirds of the people said that if we got rid of Saddam, disarmed Iraq, but there was another dictator in place, that they would not consider that to be a success.
Jeff, would large numbers of American or Iraqi civilian casualties or Iraqi military casualties, would that change your calculation?
Probably. I am personally unwilling to sacrifice a lot of American blood on this situation. I'm hoping that the whatever we learned the first time around will be put to good use, and that we will be able to do what we have to do and avoid having a mass slaughter of Americans.
Thanks.
Or Iraqis, for that matter.
Or Iraqis, yeah. Thanks very much, Jeff.
I want to be even-handed about this. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the phone call. Let's go now to Lois, and Lois is on the line from Hallandale, Florida. Hello?
Hello.
You're on the air, Lois.
Well, thank you. This is a very objective, literal question, and I was just asking someone this morning. The objective is to rid Iraq of Saddam and his sons and to set up a new type of government. Saddam has many lookalikes. Rumors have spread already that he's in hiding, and we can't find Osama. What happens if we can't find Saddam? How do you know when to end the war?
Mm-hmm. That was not tested in your poll, Bob Boorstin.
No, it wasn't tested. We did, however, test the notion of Saddam giving up the weapons of mass destruction or them being removed, but remaining in power. And if he was to remain in power, two-thirds of the people said it would not be a success. I'm frankly happy that I'm not the person who has to sort out who is the double and who is not and go chasing around a country the size of Iraq in search of Saddam. I think, however, that the Bush administration has convinced the public in a very, very, good way on their behalf, that is the Bush administration's viewpoint, that Iraq is central to the war on terrorism. Removing Saddam is central to the war on terrorism. This was not something that previous to the last 3 months you could have said. And in so doing, they've set the expectations for this war fairly high. 80% of the people in our poll say that we will remove Saddam from power. That's the likely outcome. 80% say we will find weapons of mass destruction. Now, if that doesn't happen, the question is then raised, well, did we succeed?
Mm-hmm. But Lois, from your question, for you, if they don't find Saddam Hussein himself and perhaps his sons, would that represent a failure?
Yes, it certainly would represent a failure, and I just wonder how they're going to say, well, the war is over. If they can't find Saddam, that's just how do they declare it over? Does it go on and on and on until they find him?
Well, one of the responses when that kind of question is put to, for example, Secretary of State Powell, he says things like, well, once Saddam is, you know, once he's no longer in control of the Iraqi military and the secret police and all those instruments of power, that he's a great deal less of a threat.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, if I must consider one a success or a failure, I would consider the latter somewhat of a success, although I am against the war completely.
Okay, Lois. Thanks very much for the call.
And thank you.
According to your poll, Bob, the majority of Americans define success how?
They define success as getting rid of Saddam, as disarming Iraq, and turning, I would say, bringing more stability to the region. Very interestingly, Americans do not believe that we will bring democracy to Iraq. They're very realistic about that. Only about 4 in 10 people have an expectation that that will happen.
Last night, the president talked about the possibility of additional terrorist attacks in this country, coordinated with the start of a war. Your poll did test for that as well.
Yes, we did test that, and the results are kind of a warning flag, I would say, to the Bush administration and to all of us, because when we tested for that, we asked whether or not if Saddam was removed and if Iraq was disarmed, but there were severe, more terrorist attacks on this country that were severe in nature, would that be a success? Again, two-thirds of the people said no, that would not be a success.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. Xavier joins us from Reno, Nevada.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Hello.
Success for me personally would be the evidence that we acquire after removing Saddam and being able to show the rest of the world that what we did indeed was correct.
And what would that evidence be?
Well, just that there are weapons of mass destruction, that he does have programs, various programs, that basically. Whatever we can provide the Germans, the French, the Russians, and I think that would alleviate a lot of the tensions that have been created between the United States and the U.N.
Okay. And Bob Boorstin, that was, you mentioned earlier, people, 80% of the public thought that there would be evidence of weapons of mass destruction.
Yes, and I think, in fact, that the Bush administration has created these expectations because it has laid out a case over many months with very little opposition outside of the French and the Germans and the Russians, in our media at least, telling people that this is not the case, that there are not, in fact, weapons there.
Mm-hmm. Xavier, your phone's waving in and out, so we're going to let you go. But thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's get a quick call question from John, who's in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi. As far as I'm concerned, there can be no positive outcome from this. Even if we have a military victory, the damage that has already occurred between us and our allies and the way the United States is looking to the rest of the world is going to take many years to get over, and the idea that this is going to make us safe from a terrorist attack, I think, is ludicrous. We're going to be hated even more by people who are already looking for pretext to attack us.
Was John's opinion cited in your poll?
Well, it was a majority opinion, basically, that if there was long-term damage to our relations with the allies, with the UN, and with others, that in fact there, then it would not be a success. And there's an underlying current in everything that we look at here where the people are questioning the basic framework of the foreign policy, the unilateralist framework that has appeared over the last 3 months as we've built towards war. People reject preemption. They reject unilateralism in general.
And again, proviso, all of this can change depending on what happens.
Yes, and, you know, if we got a result that 30% of the people were in support of the war beforehand, let's just say you got it, I'm sure that the day after the war began, you would get 70% in favor of it because of the power of our troops going into battle and because people back the president in such cases.
The rally to the flag effect.
Yes. Yeah.
John, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Bob Boorstin, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Bob Boorstin is director of the Worldview Institute, and he was with us here in Studio 3A. We're talking about success in Iraq. How do you define it? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email TOTN at npr.org. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about possible outcomes for the war in Iraq. Joining us now from his office here in Washington, D.C. is retired Army Major General William Nash. General Nash was an armored brigade commander during Desert Storm as well as later in Bosnia. Currently, he's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. And General Nash, welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be with you again.
What would constitute military victory in Iraq?
Well, I think you have to look at four major issues as you try to figure out how to define winning. The defeat of the Iraqi military, and as we've heard of late, if not defeat, at least the neutralization of them in the combat. Definitely have to oust the regime. Third, I think you have to find and secure and begin the process of destroying weapons of mass destruction. And lastly, I think also part of the military mission is, in fact, setting the conditions for the reconstruction process, in that the war has to be fought in such a way that at least the possibility of a fruitful and complete reconstruction is left open.
In Desert Storm, a war in which you fought, there were relatively few American casualties. Is that now a benchmark, a standard for the definition of American military success?
I think at the time, of course, everybody was pleasantly surprised at the low number of casualties. But in the fact that we expected many more. In environments where the nation's survival or well-being is not at stake, I think you can reasonably try to look at some measurement that limits casualties. But in a case like this, I mean, given why we are fighting this war, I think the American people need to be prepared for more casualties because, in fact, it is potentially a very serious confrontation we're about to have.
Should we be? There were, at the very least, hundreds of Iraqi civilians killed in that war and tens of thousands of Iraqi military casualties. Should we be prepared for similar numbers, more, less?
Well, I would hope that we were able, of course, to limit significantly the number of civilian non-combatant casualties. And I know the targeting process that the military will follow will make every effort to do that. The military, I think there will be definite significant Iraqi casualties on those key units that are believed to be the foundation of Saddam's control of the country. But I think that as we are able to bring power to bear, while there will be casualties, the speed with which this fight will take place should in the long term limit that.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Our next caller is Justin, who's on the line with us from Vancouver, Washington.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Okay.
Hi, I think really that, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, that merely by being in this conflict or being about to enter this war, that we've already failed, that it really at best our success is just in saving face. And hopefully, if we do discover some sort of evidence that they hold weapons of mass destruction, that's the only real way we can, like I said, save face on this. If we don't find that, I don't see how we can do anything more than just issue a public apology. Sorry, oops, our bad. We didn't mean to invade you. We were wrong all along. And I think that being in this conflict to begin with really shows that we failed.
So even any minimal degree of lack of embarrassment from your point of view, Justin, would require the discovery of chemical, biological weapons?
Yes, definitely.
General Nash?
Well, I would comment that I think the demonstration that our concerns and intelligence is, in fact, going to be a measure, if not of success or failure, but a measure of our wisdom within the international community. And I think there is a potential that there be a backlash should it be demonstrated that we were wrong about our assessment. we'll never be able to be cavalier about it in terms of saying oops or something like that. I mean, this is a very significant matter at hand.
Okay, Justin, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for taking me.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Lindsay, who's in her car in Fort Drum, New York.
Hi. I actually agree with the last caller who said success will be determined on whether or not we find weapons. And I know the French today said they would change their position if Saddam Hussein used weapons. And I was curious to know if your caller knows if the French and German positions might change if we find those weapons before they are used.
General Nash?
Well, I would think that whether, you know, if Saddam uses the weapons or if in the course of the war we prove beyond a reasonable doubt that, in fact, our assessment has been right all along and we're able to show these weapons to the world that we had claimed were there all along, I think it'll go a long way, if not in winning the war, but as I said before, it'll go and prove our wisdom in dealing with the issue. And I think, you know, that's going to be a significant outcome of the contest is were we right in our judgments, and how are we prepared to go forward from there in rebuilding the country?
Lindsay, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's a critical question that you just raised there at the end, General Nash. No matter how the war is fought, whether chemical and biological weapons are found or not, how the post-war period is concluded, that matters a great deal, doesn't it?
Well, I certainly think so. I'm one that very strongly believes that the history will judge our success or failure based on what we do after the fighting. That's why there have been a lot of folks in here in Washington and around the country that have expressed very great concern as to the preparation of the country to face up to these obligations. And it's good to see that, at least to some degree, that is starting to take place at a more active rate.
You were not only a military commander, you also worked as a civilian administrator for the UN, providing humanitarian aid in Kosovo, so you have some expertise in this as well. What are your concerns about the provision of that aid in this war and how that might help in constructing a post-war Iraq?
Well, I think if we can demonstrate to the world community that we, having gone to Iraq for very important security positions, we are prepared to leave Iraq in a far better posture in terms of both its political process, but also its economic and social status. And we've got to be perceived, as this all plays out, as not A, a bully, or B, an imperialist. And I think that will only be demonstrated by a long-term commitment to the betterment of Iraq.
Joining us now from his home in Beirut is Rami Houri, executive editor of the Daily Star newspaper. It's a regional newspaper published all over the Middle East. Rami Houri, thanks very much for staying up late to speak with us.
Thanks for having me.
Are there countries in the Gulf region for whom the very fact of this war would be a success?
Well, I think Kuwait certainly. I mean, public opinion in Kuwait is extremely strong for the war. The last poll I saw that was done about 3 days ago by a Kuwaiti newspaper showed like 85% of Kuwaitis supporting the war, or supporting the war and supporting it to get rid of Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi leadership, but also not wanting to hurt the Iraqi people. So they make a clear distinction between the people and the leadership of Iraq. And I think broadly in the Gulf there's much more support for the war in places like maybe United Arab Emirates or Bahrain, Qatar, places like that, Saudi Arabia to a large extent. Mm-hmm. But I think there's an ambivalent feeling also among people even who support the war, because they understand that the precedent it sets is potentially a very dangerous one, and they understand the complications that could come afterwards.
Well, in the case of Saudi Arabia, before we move on to the other areas, if Saddam is deposed and American troops, or so many American troops, are no longer needed in Saudi Arabia, might not they regard that as a success?
Well, I think they would generally be pleased with that, yes, not to have these troops, because the presence of the American troops is strongly opposed by a lot of Saudis and apparently has inspired some of the actions of Osama bin Laden and his group of terrorists. But it also is a mixed blessing in the sense that if the Americans are going to use Iraq as their new base, at least temporarily in the region, it means that Saudi Arabia is no longer quite as strategically important to the U.S. Obviously, the oil is important, but the oil is going to keep flowing. Nobody doubts that. But the Saudis are worried, I think, and rightly so, by the fact that this war may be designed in large part to bring about political change all over the region. And I think this worries the Saudis as well. And in a way, they're preempting this by starting to do their own political reforms.
Can you gauge for us the relative importance, and you may not be able to, but of how the war is fought, and in terms of opinion throughout the Middle East, that may revolve around the question of the removal of Saddam Hussein and the number of Iraqi civilian casualties, and then of the post-war period and what kind of regime is established afterwards, and then the question that General Nash was talking about just a moment ago, the idea of the United States being seen as an imperialist power and a bully.
Well, I monitor opinion around the Middle East very closely on a daily basis because our paper is published in Qatar and soon to be in Kuwait, and we're a regional newspaper published and printed and distributed all over the Middle East, so we see it as our market. And it's very clear that there's widespread public opposition in the Arab countries, except for Kuwait and maybe one or two other small Gulf sheikhs, widespread public opposition to this war. But at the same time, it's ironic that ordinary Arabs probably share the at least articulated goals of President Bush, which is freedom, democracy, and prosperity. The problem is that we've been calling for these things for the last 30 or 40 years, and it would be a lot easier and a lot cheaper for the United States to promote freedom, prosperity, and democracy by starting with those countries where it already has massive foreign assistance programs, like, for instance, Egypt or Morocco or Jordan or other countries. And so if the goals that the U.S. articulates are ones that we agree with in terms of the long-term future of the Middle East, we've been calling them for a long time. But the method that the United States is using, a unilateral militarism, is one that has plagued this region probably since the 4th century B.C., since Alexander the Great and his boys marched in here and started to redraw the map of the Middle East, and we haven't stopped having these Western armies since then, and none of them have been able to achieve those stated goals.
Let's get a caller involved. Ethan joins us from Wadsworth, Nevada.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me. I just wanted to mention quickly to an answer to your question is that it would seem to me that we've heard over and over again that the world opinion aspect is something that would be, in my opinion, a success if people were to change their ideas as to that, historically speaking, yes, the president, the United States, made this decision to go to war for a bona fide reason. And so if that bona fide reason was to come into light, that in itself, I think, would help to make it a success. But moreover, I have friends who are lawyers and businessmen and parents, and everybody that I know just has not been convinced by President Bush's statements or Colin Powell's statements. And frankly, everybody that I know who were not generally running in the street being peace activists, however, we're just not certain that this has been the proper way to go for lack of approval from the Security Council and so forth. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I just think that the world opinion would be the basis for whether or not, historically speaking, we look at this as being a success or not. But I just wanted to make that statement, and thank you very much. I'll take any suggestions or answers off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. We're talking with Rami Hoori and William Nash about how to define success in Iraq. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller. Al is on the line with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Yes. I'm just really concerned. Last night there was a show on PBS by Bill Moyer, and they were talking about this whole war was inspired by a group of, Paul Wolfowitz and Pearl and all those Zionists. And they were, and the New York Times mentioned there is going to be a solution to the Middle East that's going to be unjust solution shoved in the Palestinian people. And I would consider them to be very, very unjust that way.
Mm-hmm. Rami Hoori, is that an opinion that, you know, success is, you know, to some degree dependent on success in the larger Middle East question in terms of Israel and the Palestinians?
Well, it's a very common call here in the Middle East throughout the Arab world and even the wider Middle East, Turkey and Iran and other places. There's widespread calls for the United States to really look at the totality of the problems in this region if it really is interested in regional stability and prosperity and democracy and security. And the single biggest complaint about the U.S. for decades has been this double standard, the idea that the U.S. marshals an armada, and twice in 13 years marshals an armada to attack Iraq to implement U.N. resolutions, but does nothing similar to implement other U.N. resolutions equally valid in the case of Palestine or Israel or Cyprus or other places. So I think there's a sense, a very strong sense, that the United States has to really be consistent, or any power has to really be consistent in using its power. And if it's justifying its work, as the U.S. is very much doing now, justifying it by calling for a valid application or implementation of U.N. resolutions, well, I've got a list of around 75 U.N. resolutions that I'd like to give President Bush, the average Arab would tell you. Here's my list of resolutions mm-hmm. about Palestine and Israel, and please implement them as well. So this is going to come, this is going to loom really large after the fighting stops, the pressure on the U.S. to deal with the Arab-Israeli conflict with equal force, not necessarily military force, but political and diplomatic force. And you can see that already with the way that the British and Spanish...
Sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to... We were running out of time. I wanted to get a comment on this from General Nash.
I think... Well, first of all, I largely agree. I would just say that given all that has happened in the last 18 to 20 months... If the United States fails to be active in the Israeli-Palestinian issue following this confrontation with Iraq, then I would predict that any hope for finding allies in the region to go along with us in our pursuit in the war on terror is going to be extremely difficult, because for the last year, we have put off action on Israel-Palestinian confrontation because of this Iraq business. And after this is over, we have said we're going to do it. We've announced the roadmap about three or four times, but have yet to announce an implementation plan.
Well, General Nash,
they're going to call us to order after this affair with Iraq.
General Nash, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
And Rami Hoori, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more after a break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the looming war in Iraq and how Americans will define its success or its failure. And in this last segment, we want to concentrate on the home front and on American politics. Bob Boorstin is back with us here in Studio 3A of the Worldview Institute. And joining us now by phone from her office in Washington, D.C. is Newsweek magazine contributing editor Eleanor Clifton. Eleanor, good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be with you, Neil.
Politically speaking, can I ask you first, for the president, what would constitute success in Iraq?
I think the ouster, the removal, the capture of Saddam Hussein initially, second, low casualties on the American side, number one, and also on the Iraqi side, and a relatively brief war, a week, perhaps a month, and a war that avoids street fighting in Baghdad. I think that would be the initial list of what I would call victory.
And failure, how would you define that?
Saddam Hussein slips the noose. There are significant casualties on the American side. Saddam Hussein unleashes chemical, biological weapons, and American troops are hit by that. On the Iraqi side, if the Iraqi people suffer a great loss, either because of weapons of mass destruction or because of bombing from bombing of the Iraq's infrastructure. I think that would be failure, too. I think significant casualties are, I think American people are not prepared for that.
And let's not put too fine a point on it. Obviously, this is a political crisis for President Bush. His career is on the line here.
His career is on the line, but I think Americans really give him the benefit of the doubt. They want to believe that he's doing the right thing, and I think if there are terrorist attacks on our soil, which I think is a likely outcome of this action, I don't think the American people are going to blame the president. I think he has laid sufficient groundwork so that if there is an increase in terrorism, that he will be able to say, I told you so, and I intervene now, because to wait any longer, it would have been worse.
Bob Boorstin, you've done the polling on this, at least as of the snapshot of the American public opinion you took, a week or so ago. Did the American people agree with Eleanor on these definitions?
I think they would add one more thing, and that is finding weapons of mass destruction. They've laid that out. The Bush administration has laid that out as a very significant piece of what this is about. In fact, they've made it the central, the secondary tune to the Saddam Hussein theme, which runs throughout.
Are there differences of opinions among, did you break it down, Republicans, Democrats, Independents?
We did indeed, and you see tremendous differences. Democrats much less supportive, Independents right in the middle, Republicans extraordinarily supportive. However, people across the board are supportive of the president as a figure who will protect America. We specifically asked that, and 81% of the people say they trust him to do that. The problem comes for the president when you get below that initial read, and when people begin, you ask them questions about alliances, you ask them questions about the cost of the war, things like that, then people begin to question exactly what is happening with Iraq.
I wanted to read an email we got from Alex in Fort Lauderdale. Success, he writes, would be, I shouldn't leap to that conclusion, success would be a quick victory with few American or Iraqi casualties, the installation of the roots for a viable democracy in Iraq. And then he goes on to write, the defeat of Bush in the next presidential election for bungling the diplomacy. Eleanor Clift, do you think that the debacle of the UN that we've seen over the past few days, is that going to affect people?
I don't think that would tarnish the president's victory if, in fact, he met the other definitions we set out in the short term. But I think over the long term, even long term by this summer, and you see a military occupation in Iraq, and I think people are going to be wondering about the diversion of resources at home to propping up a new Iraqi regime. And I think the president could then be questioned about why didn't diplomacy work. I mean, I think over the long term, he will be tarnished by the diplomatic failure, but not in the short term.
Let's go to a caller. Heather's on the line with us from Apex, North Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to add my agreeal to all the people who have said that it's already a failure. There's not going to be any good coming out of this. And I would also like to say that it has to harm Bush's career once two-thirds of the Americans realize that they've been conned into believing that we're going to a war for weapons of mass destruction and we're in danger. The real reason we're going to war is because Saddam Hussein nationalized his oil fields, gave contracts for processing to France and Russia, and wants to be paid in euros, not dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reason we are going to war. And if you drop 3,000 bombs on a city of 5 million, we're not going to have thousands of casualties. We're going to have tens of thousands of casualties. And I don't know how we're going to know about it because the journalists have all left. You know, they said they're going to give them this training, but they said on the news they're all gone. And even in Bush's press conference, he let it slip that, yeah, we want the journalists out of there.
Well, Heather, not all of the journalists have left, but we shall see.
Good.
What we shall see. Thanks very much for the call. You know, obviously, Heather represents a particular point of view, Eleanor Clift, but she's not alone.
No, I think supporters of the war say that if the troops go in there and find the weapons of mass destruction and the CNN cameras are going and they can hold it up for the world to see, that that will vindicate the president's position. But the problem with that is there's so much distrust of this administration around the world, and particularly in the Middle East. They're not necessarily going to believe that anything was found. This could have been planted there. And secondly, uncovering these weapons before they fall into the wrong hands in the anarchy and the confusion that inevitably is going to follow a bombing campaign is another hurdle that I think we have to worry about. If the goal of this operation is to prevent these weapons from falling into the wrong hands, we may precipitate the very crisis that we're hoping to avoid.
Neil, let me just say that in her opposition to the war, though not in the motives she perhaps describes to why this is going to happen, Heather does represent what is a large gender gap in attitudes towards this war, and perhaps that's where Bush faces the most political trouble here. Jeremy Rosner, who was one of the people who conducted this survey, came away from it saying, men are from Texas and women are from the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Or perhaps from Apex, North Carolina. Let's go next to Brett, who's with us from Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Okay.
I just wanted to call and I wanted to say that a victory and success in Iraq is a military victory as far as I'm concerned. No matter what the political outcome afterwards, I will be voting for President Bush. And I don't believe that whether we do anything in Iraq or not is going to deter or create more problems with terrorism. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. They're going to find other reasons to do it anyway. You know, they didn't really need a reason September 11th, but they did it.
So for you, Brett, the fall of Baghdad would equal success?
I believe the fall of Baghdad and the removal of Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction and a stable groundwork for a democracy in Iraq would be perfect. I completely support President Bush in this in his actions here.
Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Eleanor Clift, we were talking earlier with some of our other guests. How important is that groundwork for a viable and diplomatic, democratic Iraq?
Well, I think here's where critics of the war and supporters of the war come together. No matter how much you hate the war, you're for the peace, and you want the country to recover, and you want this administration to make the substantial commitment it will take financially and in terms of resources, bodies, to make that happen. I must say the track record of this administration is not all that promising if you look at Afghanistan. Much of the aid that was promised to Afghanistan has not been delivered, and the commitment to securing the country doesn't extend beyond the capital city of Kabul, and Afghanistan is now once again the number one exporter of heroin, which the Taliban had put a stop to, but under sort of American control, that has been allowed to flourish again. So I think there's great wariness in that part of the world and also on Capitol Hill, whether there is the money and the political will to do the rebuilding that will be required. I think the administration is assuming that the oil reserves will pay for everything, but I think that's an overly rosy scenario.
Here are some of the stories we're following today here at NPR News. Iraq Today rejected President Bush's ultimatum to Saddam Hussein to flee the country within 48 hours. Nearly 300,000 American and British troops are in the Gulf region, poised to go to war. NPR's John Burnett is with U.S. troops from the 1st Marine Division in Kuwait. He'll talk with Michelle Norris about preparations for war, and Melissa Block reports from Martinsburg, West Virginia, on how residents there feel about the use of force against Iraq. Both of those stories later today on All Things Considered. Here on Talk of the Nation from NPR News, we're talking about how to define success in Iraq. And let's see if we can get a couple more calls in. Christine joins us from Grass Valley in California.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was interested in knowing whether or not the American public has, especially those who are for the war, has taken in consideration how the alliances backing Bush right now have been gotten primarily through buying those alliances and offering monetary compensation for backing Bush on this war, and whether or not the poll that was taken addressed that issue or even the issue of the several people throughout the world, and including our own nation, that have resigned in direct action of protesting any war on Iraq.
I think those resignations may have come too late for this poll, but Bob Boorstin, on the other question?
On the other question, Neil, we did not exactly ask on that exact question, but there is no question that people in this country are concerned about allies, how we get allies, how we keep allies, and our general stance. Is it unilateral or multilateral? They see the long-term consequences of this war. They're worried about the future, and of course they're anxious about the short-term and the military aspects of the war. But they do worry about whether there's going to be long-term damage.
Mm. Let's go now to Ed, who's with us from Tempe, Arizona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, as I look at this thing, that the victory really is going to be measured in terms of how safe we are when it's all said and done. I mean, this thing has a real big price tag attached to it in terms of human lives and in terms of the financial cost and in terms of the burnt bridges with allies that we've already seen. And who knows what might come of this, but Bush is poking the hornet's nest with a stick, and he's promising that we're going to be safer when it's all said and done. And I think that that's really the question we need to look at is, when it's all said and done, are we actually safer or not?
Or do we feel safer? Yeah.
Well, feel and or, I think we need to be, you know, use both sides of our brain, the rational and the more feeling side of things. But, you know, we need to do the gut check, and we also need to do the math. And you know, this is really going to be the thing that's going to be deciding what I do when I go to the voting booth in 2004 is, you know, this is a big poker gamble, high-stakes gamble that he's making, and, you know, it may or may not pay off. And oil is part of this, too. I mean, mm-hmm. Are we going to have cheaper oil prices when this is said and done? You know, that's something that we need to look at, too. But
Let's get a response. Eleanor Clift, is that a good measuring stick as any?
As to whether we will be safer or not, I think in the short term we will not be safer. We've already seen the alert level elevated in this country. I think inevitably there will be a rise in anti-American sentiment in the Middle East. I think the president is gambling that over a longer period of time that this show of might will deter other terrorists from thinking they can take advantage of this country, but I think most of the experts disagree that the show of might is not going to deter people who are fanatical, and they proved on 9/11 that they don't have to match this country in terms of technology and military spending to be able to bring us to our knees. And we're also reading about the potential of the suicide bombers coming to this country, so I don't think the president's going to win the gamble on that point. I think he may argue that this would have happened anyway and that he has removed one source of weapons of mass destruction which would have made this worse.
Let's get a quick response from Bob Boorstin as well.
We asked people in the survey, Neil, whether certain words describe President Bush well. And when we asked them, protects America and its people, 81% of the people said yes, that describes him well. But when we asked them, makes me feel safe, only 56% of the people said yes. Mm. So there is a large gap between how he's perceived as a national defender and how people are feeling personally. Americans are anxious.
Ed, can I throw in one other thing here real quick?
I'm afraid you can't, Ed, because we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
But we appreciate your phone call.
Great, thanks.
And I'd like to thank our guests who are with us today. Bob Boorstin, director of the Worldview Initiative 2003, based here in Washington, D.C. He was with us here in Studio 3A. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil.
And Eleanor Clift, contributing editor at Newsweek magazine, was with us from her office here in Washington, and thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Neil.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.